top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hope you had a great weekend. We're back in action now and ready to go. Norman Rule's going to be with us. He served for 34 years at the CIA, managing numerous programs relating to the Middle East. And you know he's got a specialty in Iran, and they've been a problem with us since 1979. We'll talk about the horrific situation there. Lawrence Jones is standing by to break down what's happening in Minneapolis and so much more. And there's so much going on from Greenland on down. We also have politics aplenty. Kamala Harris has her book tour. After that, she's seemingly convinced that she's going to get the nomination, which is just incredible to me, but must be great for if you're a Republican running against her. So before we get to Lawrence, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president is somewhat unorthodox, and he uses rhetoric to gain leverage here. Okay. I really think at the end of the day, with some creativity and imagination, we can work an economic and a security deal that will benefit the United States, Greenland, and also Denmark.
Yup, that's General Jack Keane not giving an inch. The president's quest to get Greenland is facing all kinds of opposition and dividing the GOP and our allies. What's the big picture here? What is the plan? I got an idea.
Number two.
We had them at their knees in 2020. I worked on an aspect of it when I was ambassador to Japan, stopping all oil purchases by the Japanese from the Iranians. The maximum pressure program was working.
Beyond brutal. That's the way I describe the mass killings and arrests of protesters in the evil empire of Iran. They are now daring Trump to act. When will they learn that doesn't work out for them?
Number one.
It's been completely inspiring to see tens of thousands of people in our city standing up for their neighbors. It's not just about resistance. It's about love. It's about love for the people of our city, you know, sliding down icy sled hills to attend a protest.
What is wrong with him? About love? Does he see the video that we see? Anything but peaceful. Minneapolis activists busting into churches, protecting rapists, all in the name of fighting ICE. As New York prepares to do the same exact thing in this city, how does this end? You know, you go to New Orleans, it's no problem. You go into various other cities, it's no problem. But you go into these blue cities, it's a huge problem. Lawrence Jones, Fox and Friends co-host, joins me now. Lawrence, do you believe this? It's inspiring for the mayor of Minneapolis to see his people attack ICE.
I mean, he didn't do much during the Floyd riots as well. So I don't know if we were expecting him to have this epiphany moment to prevent his city from burning down like it did in 2020. You know, but people's lives are at risk right now. You know, you see some of the reporting that's coming out of there, they're blocking the agents from being at their hotels there in the town. They're doxing them. They're stealing their weapons out of the cars. They're stealing some of the paperwork that they're hunting down some of the criminals as well. So if the politicians don't get a hold of this, this can spiral real quickly. I think it's already started to.
So Axios is reporting that President Trump is still determined on the deportations and the numbers and everything, but he admits that he does not like the optics of what's going on in Minneapolis. So what is the remedy?
I mean, I don't think you can leave Minneapolis right now just by, when you look at some of the numbers that they've already gotten in Minneapolis, it's just stunning. And the criminal backgrounds of the people that they've arrested there is stunning as well. But at the same time, you know, I said this from the very beginning of the administration, that the American people, we're emotional people, and we can be a little fickle when it comes to certain issues. And so what I meant by that is, yeah, they are we're compassionate people. We want the criminals to leave. And our memory is very short. You know, he's already solved the biggest disaster, which was the border. So now that it's solved, it's not on the top of mind of people on the day-to-day basis. Those independent voters, those more progressive voters that voted for Trump. So I think you continue to be aggressive on the people that are the worst of the worst, quote-unquote. But you can't, it's just not practical to think that you're going to get a lot of people supporting going to Home Depots and things like that. It is true that they broke the law and there has to be punishment. But when you look at the polling, when you look at the people out there, they're just not going to support it.
So this is more of a visual, but I want people to hear this. Do you believe these people that are so inspiring to Mayor Fry as they go look to beat up on ICE agents and cut them off in the streets and harass them where they go, Here's what they did yesterday. They actually broke into a Catholic mass to yell and scream at the pastor and everybody else. Cut five. You believe these twisted minds?
I do. Look, I don't pretend to be the world's greatest Christian. I have my flaws. But these are godless people. I mean, you just go outside and go to some of the protests and some of the things that they shout. Last week, they were using babies at protests to hope that the ICE agents wouldn't gas them with pepper bullets after they assault them, and having the babies there as shields. Normal people don't act this way. Normal people don't take over church services. I mean, that used to be an off limits. Like, what did the church do? Did they do anything wrong? So
they don't like the pastor. They say the pastor hasn't spoke out against the targeting, what they say, of the Somali community.
Has no obligation to. The pastor doesn't have to say a word. I mean, I thought the church was a safe zone. I thought it was a safe zone. You know, it shouldn't be politics from the pulpit. Good for the pastor.
So I wanted to bring you to, you know, policing as well as anyone, Lawrence, and I want you to hear what Josh Shapiro says. I think he has a broad stroke here, and I don't think it's for this. What he believes is with federal troops. Cut eight.
The safety in the community is, as you asked, in Minnesota right now. One of the things I understand as the former chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is the way you create safe communities is by building trust between law enforcement and the community and investing in both. I mentioned before that we made a pledge to hire 2,000 police officers. We're somewhere around 1,900. We'll eclipse that number. We've also invested hundreds of millions of dollars in violence prevention in our communities, in our churches, our rec centers, and other places. And Jackie, violent crime is down 12% in Pennsylvania. Fatal gun violence is down 42%.
So the federal troops, you can't possibly walk into cities that they spend weeks in and establish the local community. I mean, that's for the cops. You establish relationship with the local cops, the state police, the local police, and then you go and say, listen, I got to target these people. But with these blue states, they in sanctuary cities, they're prevented from doing that. So they got to go in and just bang on the doors.
There you go. There you go. You're exactly right. I was just getting ready to go to that point. Obviously, the method should be that the local cops hold the people that are a risk to society in custody and then allow the federal authorities to come pick them up. That's the ideal. And then also when it comes to these raids, we're not asking the local authorities to, you know, do the raids, but they should be there to coordinate and let us know what's going on in this community. This is what we're hearing on the ground. That's the way it works. That's the way, as liberal as New York City is, it was working that way under Adams, where they had cooperation. They weren't actually there on the ground, you know, doing the door kicking to get the people out of the country, but they were providing intelligence, coordinating when there was protests to block it off and all of that. That's all they're asking Minneapolis and all the rest of these cities to do, but they're refusing to. So then it gets out of control, and then it spirals, and then it takes place. Well, if there was cooperation to block off, and protests were put on the sidewalk, then none of this.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little there, Lawrence, but let me bring you to the last thing that you can relate to. Lawrence, as you know, hails from Texas, and I had the Dallas mayor on over the weekend. He's Eric Johnson, was a Democrat, flipped to be a Republican, and he sees what's happening with the communists that got elected in New York City, how they're pushing all the billionaires out, and how they basically are going to raise taxes, corporate taxes, on everyone, and they're buried in debt. So this is what he says. He says, Dallas has become a sanctuary from people running from sanctuary cities. Cut 39.
It appears to be that New York wants to be the heartbeat of socialism in the United States, and that appears to be the direction it's going. But down here in Dallas, right. I can tell you we embrace business, we embrace capitalism, we embrace corporations who employ folks and who are actually pillars of our community. So we're proud to be the number one destination for corporate relocations in the United States.
So have you found that too in Dallas? I mean, it just seems to be exploding in a good way.
Yeah, you know, born and raised there. Brian, you know, we have a lot of pride, not only in the city, but in the state as well. And the one thing we encourage people, you know, enjoy the food, the culture, the no income tax and all that. But just don't bring your policies with you. There's a lot of people. There's a reason why Texas is getting an extra congressional seat. I think we actually may get two. It's because they're fleeing places like California and New York, not because the food and culture is not good there, but because the overtaxation, the crime, and the fact is that they just don't get while this homeless population all across the country right now, no one is doing anything about it.
So get this, the billionaires tax is going to be voted, might be on the ballot in California. And there were protests outside David Sacks' house because he's a billionaire. Billionaires got to give more. So he said, okay, between the billionaires tax and now the protests, he basically says, I hear you. Peter Thiel says, I hear you. There's this one guy who handles a lot of high-end earners and says he's got four billionaires leaving the state, high-profile guys leaving the state. And guess who wants them? Austin, Miami, and Dallas. Mm-hmm. They're recruiting the billionaires. Go, hey, you don't want me here? You're going to tax me to be here? I'm out of here. They don't seem to understand the billionaires got rich for a reason. They don't give their money to put it into a black hole.
That's exactly right. And I think the politicians, to be fair to Eric Johnson, the mayor, and Greg Abbott, the governor, when they hear that a business wants it, that's on the tipping point of moving, they say, okay, come in. Let me make sure that you get some incentives to move here, because we don't have this adversarial relationship between our business community. We know it's going to bring more jobs to our state. We know it's going to bring less property taxes for our state as well because of the relationship with these businesses. That's not going off. That's not going around on around at other places in the country. The other thing is, Brian, a few months back, we launched our own Wall Street, which is called Y'all Street. And so you're going to get a lot of businesses just from that alone.
Absolutely. Lawrence Jones, always great to have you on.
All right, big guy. All right. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Stay safe. 1-866-408-7669. Your call's next. Bottom of the hour, we go inside the Iranian unrest. And what options do we have to help out? Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Some things are the same. What Donald Trump believed in 2016 is more or less what he believes in now. That's kind of consistent. His themes are his themes. I think he is more confident. I think he has grown hardened, and I think those around him have grown hardened. I also think the first term he really tested boundaries. I think in the second term, he's not in the mood to see boundaries. So, and he continues to love chaos. He does very well in it. That suggests to me there will be more chaos.
Well, we mean chaos. That means multitasking. He'll take Greenland on. He'll talk about getting your 401k and using it for down payments if you want to do that. He'll talk about capping credit card numbers. And he'll also talk about engaging the Ayatollah to stop killing his own people while at the same time trying to get things under, bring some order to Minneapolis. That's not chaos. That's doing multiple things at once. And then you can make a decision there. That's obviously Peggy Noonan. So that's what they're going to be voting on in the midterms. That's why I think the Greenland fight is not one the president should have. Because if the European Union gets tariffed they're going to come February 1st for not agreeing to sell them Greenland. That means that they will blow up. They're going to retaliate. They're going to blow up the whole EU deal. You know how hard it was to get that EU deal and how fantastic it was for businesses on both sides of the pond? It was great. So it was done. The UK deal is done. The EU deal is done. They have the South Korean deal done, the Japanese deal done. So these are all deals that were real positive. You don't want to blow up the biggest deal to date over Greenland, especially because I think the answer is really simple. The president says, listen, you got rare earth. We're the only ones that can mine it. We'll do it. And now we're going to expand our naval and space command. We'll do it. No problem. We'll take care of that. And then we'll get some icebreakers from Norway and Sweden. We need them desperately. And then we talk about maybe bringing some industry to the island. And then maybe there's a situation where we revisit it. But right now, Denmark doesn't do anything, really. They give millions upon millions of dollars, but it's to sustain a population of 86,000, mostly fishermen. President says someone's got to get the rare earth out of the ground, and it's not going to be China or Russia. It's going to be us. So that's why... Peggy Noonan says he has chaos. I don't really say chaos. Chaos is cheap. It's like a lazy description. Just like people go, oh, the president's getting old. The president's getting old. What do you mean? Because he's doing too many things at once? Or because he nods off at a meeting? Could happen. For me, everybody knows me. No one ever says, oh, age is catching up to me. It's called you don't sleep enough. And if you sit in a hot room with a long meeting, the last 3 hours, you're not off. So people make sweeping decisions that Donald Trump is too old, because we just witnessed a president get elected too old and then literally fall apart in the White House. But I digress. Let's talk about what they were just talking about, the politics. And the president needs to get the economy going. The foreign policy has been phenomenal. It's all to contain China. But I do think the president's got to make sure nothing intentionally gets in the way, like a government shutdown. Make sure that doesn't happen. Get the appropriations bills passed, whatever has to happen, because that'll hurt your economy, hurt a lot of people. And now what you do is you got to keep everything rolling. You got to get, by the time those tax returns come in, they'll be greater and bigger than ever. Hopefully people will spend a little bit on that, be able to pay off their credit cards, get a little healthier, get some companies believing in the economy to open up different markets. And then maybe we could see some companies coming here, coming home. So that's what I hope for. But we'll discuss that. Now, in about 5 minutes, I'm going to be diving deep into Iran. I'm not ignoring the story. And I understand that in the recent polls, most people, 70% of the country, don't want us militarily involved. But at the same time, if you ask those people, how many people are going to be slaughtered? And should you as Americans do something about it? You might have a different point of view. I think, personally, you might have a different point of view. A couple of things over the weekend. Everybody covered Minneapolis. You know what they didn't cover? They didn't cover any of the criminal activity that was taking place. They didn't cover or bring up the second shooting. You know what the second shooting was? A Venezuelan, warrant for his arrest, tries to flee. One ICE officer, chased him down, at which time he starts fighting the officer. And then two people came out and started hitting the officer with shovels and brooms. The officer gets his gun out and shoots one assailant in the leg, gets some help. They arrest all three. You know who they are? Criminal legal immigrants. Why didn't you bring that up over the weekend? When Jacob Fry is coming out and saying, I'm inspired by Minneapolis, who is out there going to bat for their neighbors. Why not say, hey, how do you explain breaking into an FBI car and stealing the gun safe and then stealing the guns inside, as well as the paperwork and addresses that they have no business seeing, let alone keeping? How about that criminal behavior when they push an ICE agent up against the wall? Never asked about that.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There is no doubt that this bloodbath has not ended. And what is actually happening on the ground now, they have brought in Iraqi militia, reported Pakistani and also Afghani militia, in addition to the IRGC, to the Baizeh militia, which they own, to patrol the streets, loudspeakers, and people with machine guns on the corners, making certain that nobody comes out of their residence. If they do, they're going to be shot, and they have shot them.
That is General Jack Keane, whose information is impeccable. He's with the Institute of Study of War. Norman Rule joins us now. He served for 34 years in the CIA, managing numerous programs, all relating to the Middle East. Norman is a senior advisor for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's a regular contributor on Cypher, a brief podcast. And Norman joins us now. Norman, thanks so much for being here. It's been a real bloody few days. Brutality beyond description. What are your numbers say in terms of arrests and deaths in Iran?
Good morning, Brian. This has been the most violent period in Iran's history in perhaps 40 years, perhaps going back to the 1980s. Wow. And what's been the most extraordinary thing about this protest and period of unrest is it's been the most powerful unrest the Islamic Republic has faced literally in its entire time frame. So we're watching at least 500 of its own security personnel have been killed by its people. Now, what that tells you up front is the Iranian people themselves are turning against the government security. There, as to the number of protesters, the numbers aren't known, may never be known. You're hearing numbers as low as a few thousand. You're hearing as numbers as high as 12, 13, 14,000. And the reason those numbers aren't going to be known is some of those people will die in prisons. Some of those people will die afterwards of their wounds. Some of those people will have families who will be told, don't tell people how your sons or daughters, fathers, mothers died. And the funerals will be ordered to be held in private. In fact, the families will be told you can't have the bodies back unless the funerals are held in great secrecy. It's really an incredible regime.
Norman, they're charging the families for the bullets used to kill their loved ones.
Not only doing that, they're charging them very high fees just to have the bodies returned, because by charging such high fees, the families are unable to afford to have the bodies returned. And in essence, that prevents the funerals from being held, and that prevents further protests from taking place. It's a horrific situation.
They're bringing militias back from Iraq in order to kill people in cold blood right in the streets. The number I heard is 16,500. And then Trey Yingst over in Israel said that they got numbers as high as 50,000, and about 330,000 or more have been hurt or arrested, somehow wounded or arrested in that time. So this shows how desperate they are, but it seems to have worked for now, because it was only like three protests on Sunday.
Well, what you're looking at is a government that has put ground troops throughout its country. And again, we need to keep in mind, these protests took place in virtually every major town and city in the entire country. Iran has 31 provinces. These protests took place in every province. They've been taking place almost every year since 2017, but this was the most compressed and violent period of protest since that time. But they've put ground troops, they've put militias, they've brought in, as your report stated, personnel from other countries. They pulled out the stops to push back against the protesters. And I think what is worst of all is they've described their own people as terrorists. There's something really pretty unpleasant about a government that in order to put down people complaining about a collapse of currency and government management, of describing their people as terrorists.
Although our Minneapolis mayor calls ICE agents terrorists here in this country. So let's talk about what our options are. So the president says, hey, I hear you, keep protesting. The help is on the way. So what should we do? Because, if we just blindly go in there and start bombing, the American people aren't necessarily support that, number one. Number two is that there's a chance they'll rally around the flag and make us the problem. So what would you do?
Well, I want to be careful here. My entire career has been to avoid providing what we call policy prescriptive counsel to presidents and policymakers. But the president's national security strategy of December 2025 states what how he sees the Middle East, and that is to avoid involving the United States in forever wars, in civil wars. And his policy thus far has been rather clear. Basically, he's told the Iranian government, I will conduct sharp, violent military action against you if you continue to kill your own people. And very, very quickly after that, the Iranians pulled back on some of the worst of the violence. I think that's a testimony to the strength of the United States and the principles of this president. He then conducted a diplomatic campaign. He had partners in the region reach out to tell the Iranian government this president is serious. He imposed fresh sanctions on the Iranian government, unprecedented, 25% new tariffs on the Iranian government for anyone who deals with them, to say, look, you cannot undertake these actions. And last, he has told them they must get rid of their nuclear weapons program, their missile program, and their militia program. Brian, I need to just dive in on one point. The Defense Intelligence Agency issued a chart some months ago talking about Iran's potential ICBM program. And they stated in that chart that in the year 2035, Iran could have the capability of an ICBM capable of reaching the United States. We don't want to have Iran and North Korea with ICBMs with nuclear weapons pointed at the United States. The president is right to pursue a program that not only deals with stopping Iran from killing its protesters, but ending Iran's nuclear program, missile threat, and its regional terrorism.
So Israel said to the president, he made it public too, don't do anything right now. Which is interesting. I never heard Netanyahu not want some type of action when you see some abhorrent behavior, usually against Israel. And then you saw the Gulf states do it too. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE have come out and said, you know, they tried to push the president back and say, please don't take action. Why?
I personally think those reports are a garble. First of all, in the Gulf states, their position is going to be, we need to be careful about actions that promote chaos or instability. We need to make sure that we don't do something that causes Iran to lash out against all of the U.S. bases in the region, and to lash out against oil flow from in the Strait of Hormuz. And the president would agree with that. We don't want a further war in the region. So it's a question more of how you approach this. And I think the same is with Israel. Do we want to start a conflict where Iran begins launching dozens of ballistic missiles against Israel when we may not have at present the right defensive package in place? So I think it's a question of what we do, when we do it, how we do it, that achieves the goals the president seeks. And the president's approach was, I have diplomacy, I have economic tools, I'm moving an aircraft carrier in place, I will approach this step by step, and I will do this in a very careful, considered fashion. I think that's what you're looking for in an administration.
So what I think is almost comically ridiculous is that the foreign minister told Bret Baier Thursday that the president should learn from what he did in June and not make the same mistake. Really? You mean taking out your nuclear program, stopping the progress that you were making? And number two is he challenged the president to take action. This is the same guy who took out the chief of terror, Soleimani. I think they profiled the wrong guy. The president always follows through, especially when it has to do with Iran.
He does. And again, I think if you look at the nuclear program and the killing of Qasem Soleimani, the president follows through in the same way. Months of warning, months of attempting to use diplomacy and economic pressure, not rushing to military action. And when military action was used, it was surgical, it was precise, and it was done in a way that did not lead to a conventional war that sucked America into a forever war into the region. And I think there's profound lessons as to how the president would go forward for the American people and for the world and for the Iranians to watch. This is a president who will live up to his word. But Abbas Araghchi is a propaganda mouthpiece.
So, Norman, what's likely to replace? And that's what I heard some of those Gulf states were worried, because they think the Arab Spring, am I next? The people rise up and toss out their government. So there's a fear that there's something worse. It's hard to imagine, but could we expedite the Ayatollah exit and then get something worse?
Brian, within the U.S. Government and the intelligence community, the three rarest words you'll often hear are, I don't know, because everyone pretends to know the future. I will tell you honestly, we need to have some humility here. There is a very powerful military. They have a wide network. It's likely you'll have some sort of government dominated by these individuals in a successor regime, but we need to have some humility as we move forward. And this is why, again, you want a very careful, thoughtful approach, speaking with our partners in the region who understand this region, and that includes the Israelis. Again, what the president is doing. But as we're looking at this, the Iranian people have to choose their own future.
So I wanted to get you on this report, too, that the Iranian elites, I guess that most people in government, allegedly are moving millions of dollars out of the country amid the sanctions that could be coming. And we also heard that the Ayatollah's got a plan to get to Moscow quick. The validity of some of this stuff that you know of, do you think we should go with that?
Personally, I don't think the Supreme Leader will be going to Moscow. The last time he left country was in May of 1989 when he went to China and North Korea. So that gives you a sense of his worldview. But the Iranian leadership is notorious amongst its own people for its corruption. And they already have large sums of money overseas, and their family members overseas living quite well while their own people suffer. And it would not only not surprise me that they're moving money overseas, but it would surprise me that they would not be moving money overseas at this time.
So the other thing that, you know, when people talk about subtle things you can do, cyber attacks, some people said are already underway. Number two is we could find a way to put the internet back on, and maybe it's Starlink. I'm not sure, but you need some type of receiver in there, so it's not a matter of just Starlink automatically lighting up everybody's internet. So cyber attacks could happen. But what about targeting of the IRGC? They have bank accounts. They got passports. They got family. I'm sure a lot of that family likes to go to Qatar. Maybe likes to study in Dubai, maybe likes to be able to go over to Saudi Arabia and Lebanon. What about preventing that and start encrypting their lives?
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. And I'm hearing a policy voice here. You have wisdom, sir. It should basically be that anyone who is associated with this regime and their family members should not be able to enjoy the good life that they deny their own people. And we should talk to our partners and allies and make sure that they're not able to have business benefits, travel benefits, tourist benefits, that they again deny their own people. My one comment on some of the internet Starlink issues, just remember that anything can be jammed on the inside, and that Iran has declared that anyone who is caught with a Starlink is subject to the death penalty since June. So we need to be just thoughtful as to how we move forward with that so that we don't get the wrong people in trouble.
You know, I think we could drop in like a lunar module on Mars, just encase it in bubble wrap, drop it in the middle of the street. No one's fingerprints are on it. Light it up and see how long people can keep it up before it gets discovered and communicate. Lastly, do you know who seems to be a loser in all this? If you look at Venezuela, you look at China, you look at Iran, you think China. And then if you go ahead with these secondary sanctions on everyone who buys oil from Russia, that's how China has been enjoying discount oil in Iran, discount oil in Venezuela, discount oil from Russia, helping fuel their economy, which still has its struggles. I mean, I'm sure that China's smart people. I'm sure they're seeing what Trump is doing.
You're correct, and you're also watching that all of Iran's proxies through the region are watching Iran get become weaker and less financially able to support them in the future. So as Iran becomes weaker, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis realize they have a more limited and less positive future. But also keep in mind that the Quds Force, the people who built those proxies, still exists, and it's been providing weapons to governments in East Africa, to the Sudanese government, for example, trying to rebuild a program so that it can replace what it's lost in Syria. So we have to keep up the program to push back against the people who built those terrorist organizations, because these organizations are now watching their gravy train suffer a terrible defeat as the United States works successfully against it.
And we're moving assets into the area. So there's something up. We can't wait to see what goes on. Norman, thanks so much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Norman Rule helping us out. 1-866-408-7669. I'm going to get to your emails because I see some coming in at BrianKilmeade.com. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I hope everyone had a nice holiday and got what they wanted for Christmas. I got what I wanted, my very own someone else's Nobel Prize. which I cherish. And in my stocking, I got Maduro, Nicolas Maduro. We did a reverse Santa on him. We came down the chimney with a bag and took him away.
So that was the moderately funny cold open. It's just basically an attack. There's no real humor in it. The most humorless thing is Pete Hegseth. So you just have a guy come out who does Weekend Update and just Colin Jost, just yell, acting tough guy. Okay. Happen to know, probably pretty good source, that Pete likes it. So good luck with that. Every once in a while, try to work the word humor into Saturday Night Live. Look at some old episodes. They used to be funny. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing I want you to hear is everyone's saying, who are they picking up on the streets? So I went and found out on Thursday. I said, you know, let's go find out. I went and looked up the stats. And roughly, you know, 50% have criminal convictions. The others have charges, criminal charges, all leading to we have to get them off the streets and into custody. And then if the situation presents itself, get them out of the country. So listen to this exchange between Margaret Brennan, who only combats Trump officials, no Mayor Jacob Frey of Minneapolis, no combat there. Listen to this, cut to.
Every single individual has committed a crime, but 70% of them have committed or have charges against them on violent crimes and crimes that they are charged with or have been convicted of that have come from other countries that are here illegally, first of all, and then they have committed a criminal act while they've been here or in their home countries as well.
But it's not 70%.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
70% of everyone
you guys keep changing your percentage. You pick and choose what numbers you think work. But that is the facts, is that 70% of the people that we have detained have charges against them or have been convicted of charges, and they need to be brought to justice.
Our reporting is that 47%, based on your agency's own numbers, 47% have criminal convictions.
Do you understand that she's not listening? Do you understand that 47% convictions, the other one with charges, together, that's criminal behavior. Some needs to be followed up with. Maybe some people are wrongly accused of DUI or raping children. We'll see. I don't want to take that chance because Joe Biden didn't care to let everybody in, and Mayorkas lied about it for 4 years. So they're rounding people up. If the charges don't stick, they want to make sure they go through the court process. The other ones, you're gone. You're a criminal. You're a convict that never should have been let in. You're gone. So do you understand? No, that's not it. Your numbers don't say it. It said charges, convictions and charges together is 70%. She should listen because she just has these little asides at the end to try to diminish whoever that expert is, mostly from the Trump administration.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade show coming into you fast and furious. After all, what a weekend we had. You cannot watch the news over the weekend, study the news, read some perspective of the news, and not be fired up to do the show today. And I know if you want to be part of it, we got some room. I got 1-866-408-7669. I got Vice Admiral Robert Horwood. He's a member of the Iran Policy Project at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. He's going to be joining us on Zoom at the bottom of the hour. And we also have good news. We're now on YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel, and I can't wait for you to go check that out. We're going to start posting some of the clips here, do some original things, really create a channel that you feel comfortable hearing about. So if you ever miss the show or you want to add to the show, not only would it be based mostly around the radio show and what we're able to do visually, but also around what I'm able to do around the channel, from with the Fox and Friends to do the One Nation. And like today, for example, doing the Five and then going to Germany like last week. You'll get a different perspective if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is up and running today. So don't blame yourself if you don't have it yet. So we have a lot to discuss. Knocking it down to just three big stories. We got some other stories. But for now, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president is somewhat unorthodox, and he uses rhetoric to gain leverage here.
Okay.
I really think at the end of the day, with some creativity and imagination, we can work an economic and a security deal that will benefit the United States, Greenland, and also Denmark.
I agree, General. There's plenty of off-ramps for the President of the United States. I hope he takes one of them. Not giving an inch. The President's quest to get Greenland is facing all kinds of opposition and dividing the GOP and our allies. What's the big picture plan here? I have an idea.
Number two.
We had them at their knees in 2020. I worked on an aspect of it when I was ambassador to Japan, stopping all oil purchases by the Japanese from the Iranians. The maximum pressure program was working.
Wow. The Bills have just fired their coach. That's stunning. That is Senator Bill Hagerty. Beyond brutal, that's the only way to describe the mass killings and arrests of protesters in the evil empire of Iran. They're now daring Trump to act. When will they learn that doesn't work out for them?
Number one.
It's been completely inspiring to see tens of thousands of people in our city standing up for their neighbors. It's not just about resistance. It's about love. It's about love for the people of our city, you know, sliding down icy sled hills to attend a protest.
He's just such an embarrassment and not self-aware. Really? Peaceful? He's proud? Anything but peaceful. Look at the video. Minneapolis activities busting into churches, going after ICE agents, protecting rapists, all in the name of fighting ICE, as New York prepares to do the same thing. They're training 4,000, the socialists are, DSA, they're training 4,000 anti-ICE agents to roam the streets. They're all getting paid, I'm sure, because they're asking in this meeting that was reported in the New York Post, they're asking for donations because they think Minneapolis is the template to fight back against ICE. Ladies and gentlemen, ICE are Americans. They're law enforcement. The people that brought you to fund the police and then said it was the craziest statement ever, they're bringing you to fund ICE. That's how nuts this is. And then over the weekend, I'm not kidding, they broke into a church, started screaming at the pastor, telling parishioners, you belong on the streets protesting ICE. Are you crazy? And this idiot mayor continues to say they're out there for peace and how proud he is. Why were they not confronted on any of the Sunday shows? Of course, Jacob Fry didn't do Fox News Sunday. Or with any of this video, have someone just say, hey, mayor, you think it's peaceful? Does this look peaceful? They're defiling an FBI car. Does this look peaceful? They ripped a gun safe out of a car, broke open the safe, and stole the guns. Do you know they stole the paperwork from an FBI vehicle, too? Does that sound peaceful? It isn't peaceful, but yet they continue to say stupid things that we expect us to buy as if they're heroes in Minneapolis. Heroes to who? Do you think that if you were running for president, you could say, I'm so proud of Minneapolis? It's scary if we're in a country saying half the country is proud of what's happening in Minneapolis and half isn't. My sense is most of you are embarrassed about what's happening in Minnesota, let alone around the country. At least that's my hope. Listen to this idiot mayor, cut one.
We have been working very hard with a number of different jurisdictions to keep the people of our city safe. People in our city have been working very hard to keep themselves safe. I mean, it's been completely inspiring to see tens of thousands of people in our city standing up for their neighbors. It's not just about resistance. It's about love. It's about love for the people of our city, you know, sliding down icy sled hills to attend
a protest. All right, I can't even hear it anymore. So this is what their peaceful people have done. You could see the video of ICE being pushed up against the wall, agents being knocked around, but they'll show video of a woman being taken out of a car screaming she's handicapped. She's not handicapped. She's screaming something abhorrent, but she's running from cops blocking the roadways. Do you understand that? And then when people say, well, they had to use tear gas to disperse a crowd and there were kids there. What the heck are kids doing in an angry crowd? And if you're going to go cut ICE off and try to block them into blocks, lack of a better term, and then innocent people get caught up, when are you going to realize that that's part of the organized resistance that's responsible for it? And then, of course, you have the President of the United States. His Justice Department says we're going to be investigating the mayor and governor. Here's Todd Blanche, the Deputy Attorney General, cut for.
You saw the governor and the mayor actively encouraging criminals to go out on the street and impede ICE. That is not allowed under our law. When a federal officer is out doing their job, they have to be allowed to do their jobs. And the fact that we had to stand up and tell a mayor, that we had to stand up and tell a governor to stop encouraging the folks that are out there running around trying to stop ICE, to stop encouraging them, when what they really should be doing is helping their fellow federal officers. American people can see what the mayor has been saying. They can see what the governor's been saying. And it's obvious that that has to stop.
So what I would have done, Kristi Noem did a good job on Sunday. What I would have done is this. oh, they're doing the right thing. You're very proud. They're an occupation force. All these horrible terms that have radicalized all these lunatics on the street, led by a lot of radical lesbian women. What they're doing, what I would do is say, I want you to meet 26 criminals that we've arrested. Here's a rapist. Here's a guy who's driving drunk, ran over somebody. Here's somebody else that's looked for murdering three people over in El Salvador. Run through them. Just say, hey, Margaret Brennan. Hey, Jonathan Carl. Do you want them on the street? Because if we didn't send ICE in, they would be. Do you want them as your neighbors? Because if we didn't send ICE in, they'd be there. And when they go out to protect people and say, I'm going to go shopping for my neighbor who's scared, your neighbor wouldn't be scared if they're here legally. They would love it because they know how hard they work to get here legally. And they know that they're proud to say that they're here legally. And nobody wants, we don't have time to throw out legal American residents. Like legal, like immigration, don't like illegal immigration. But here's what the administration's up against. Perceptions. CBS poll. When stopping and detaining people, ICE is being, that's the question, too tough. 61% of the people say too tough. About right, only 24%. Not tough enough, only 15%. That number was 56% in November. So CBS shows a trend away from Donald Trump on immigration. Although, when asked who's better on immigration, Republicans got a 10-point lead. Is ICE making communities safer? 52% say less safe. So this is what they got to worry about. Do I think the polls lean left? Yes, but they're not totally off. As far as, are you aware, do you think this shooting was justified by Renee Good? The shooting of her was justified. Not justified, 53%, justified, 35%. So they're losing their argument. They're breaking into churches and disturbing hotels, chanting her name. They don't care about her at all. She's training to be an anti-ICE warrior. She was doing something and ignoring cops. We'll do an investigation and find out the cop acted properly. But if you hit me with your car while I tell you to stop, I'm pretty sure I got to take extreme action to stop you from running over me. On immigration, 42% say the protests against ICE have gone too far. 10% are Dems, 35% are independents, 35% are Republicans. So we'll see. Now, on the issue of who are they arresting? Because you listen to the Democratic senators and congressmen and people on the streets who are protesting, and they say these people aren't criminals. Only 5% are criminals. Not true. 40% are convicted. The other 28% are people with charges. So a conviction or trial are imminent, but they've left the system. And now we got to track them down with no help from local police. So listen to this exchange. Notice convictions and notice charges. Either way, they're in the criminal system. Margaret Brennan, cut to.
Every single individual has committed a crime, but 70% of them have committed or have charges against them on violent crimes and crimes that they are charged with or have been convicted of that have come from other countries that are here illegally, first of all, and then they have committed a criminal act while they've been here or in their home countries as well.
But it's not 70%.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
70% of everyone
you guys keep changing your percentage. You pick and choose what numbers you think work. But that is the facts, is that 70% of the people that we have detained have charges against them or have been convicted of charges, and they need to be brought to justice.
Our reporting is that 47%, based on your agency's own numbers, 47% have criminal convictions.
So she's not even listening. You said you might have 47% with convictions. But the other 37% or whatever it is to get you to 70 are the ones with charges. So they're in the criminal justice system and they're trying to evade it. That's what makes them eligible to be tossed out. Other people overstayed their visas. Some of them say civil offense. I actually want people rounded up and explain themselves. Get their moment in front of a judge and they're gone or they stay. One way or another. But if they stay illegally and have kids with birthright citizenship, they become residents. They become citizens. And then they go, how could you throw out a mom with a three-year-old that's born here that's an American citizen? That's the game plan. Let them all in and let the next Republican deal with it. It's crazy. So when I come back, I'll take some calls. But we got some good news. For the first time, we are being heard on KVI 570 AM in beautiful Seattle, Washington. We're going to air from all 3 hours every single day from 6 to 9 AM Pacific time. It is Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thanks so much for carrying the show. I think you're going to love it. When we come back, we open up the phones, and maybe if you're in Seattle, we'll put you first, and then we'll talk about what's happening here. We'll talk about what's happening in Greenland. I'll give you my plan going forward. There's a lot of ways off ramps here as the president heads to Davos. I hope we don't get to February 1st and the president puts tariffs on our allies, because they're going to respond back and it's not going to help the economy. Without a good economy, the president cannot hold on to the House and maybe even lose the Senate. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. News, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And when I ran for Congress in 2018, I've been calling for the abolishment of ICE. We see what's happening right now where they're terrorizing communities, but it's also what's happening behind the wall with ICE, people that are dying in custody. So this agency must be abolished. In the meantime, we need to pursue accountability. And what I hope will happen is that people will link arms and join with us in defense of our neighbors, in defense of our communities. And if there cannot be justice, because justice would mean that all those lives we've been robbed of, they would still be with us. But there must be accountability.
So that is Ayanna Pressley, a member of the squad. She is singing the Republican song. Did he just say abolish ICE? Abolish ICE. Here we go again. Abolish the reimagine police. You know, defund the police. There we go. So they're doing it again. They're looking at ICE. The people who have with their wits about it might not like what's going on, but they don't think they don't want to abolish the division. Who else is going to do illegal immigrant enforcement? Certainly not in your sanctuary cities. That means absolutely no one will do it. So here we go. Governor Shapiro was asked about that too. Cut 7.
The issue of political violence, which has come to my front door, impacted the president in Butler, Pennsylvania. And I think it is critically important that we together, Democrats and Republicans, speak and act with moral clarity and say that type of violence has no place in our society. Not against me, President Trump, Charlie Kirk, Melissa Hortman in Minnesota, no one. And it should not be hard to universally condemn that.
Right. And by the way, the protesters, not only are they out of control with violence, and while even though their mayor keeps saying they're doing everything peacefully and he's inspired by it, listen to protesters. It's more of a visual one. I got it. But just picture this. You're in church. It is Sunday. And through the back door, which sadly has been a place where assassins come in. Listen to this. Cut 5. Can you imagine that? And then the pastor tries to engage him and he just starts screaming in his face. Doug, you're in Nebraska. Hey, Doug.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's on your mind?
Well, the thing that seems to drive me crazy is that constantly we are told about how ICE is so terrible and all these protesters want to protest against them. But what no one mentions is the real reason the liberals and the Democrats are against ICE is because they're trying to remove people who are essentially voting off the grid. You have illegals who get granted Medicare cards and driver's licenses, which in certain states allow you the right to vote. They're also changing the population demographics for the appointment of House members. So literally, this has nothing to do with subjective kind of qualifications of why ICE is good or bad. This is all about votes. It's been that way ever since, and it drives me nuts that the main political arena seems to ignore this constantly. No one talks about this. It's ignored.
And to think about the weight on the social system. When you have kids that they come over here illegally, their kids go to school, they don't speak English. That's a weight on the system. That means your kid's not getting the attention they need. What about the medical care? When you're in California, Governor Newsom bragged that he was giving illegal immigrants free medical. So Medi-Cal was attracting tens of thousands of illegals. You're putting into that system in California, and somebody else is getting it who's not even from this country. And then when you go to collect the illegal immigrant criminals amongst them, you get pushback because the mayor and governor in a lot of these states make ICE seem to be, and if I can quote exactly, the Gestapo. Gary, you're in Oklahoma. What's on your mind?
Oklahoma.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Brian. I had an incident with ICE, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
Go ahead.
I was at Home Depot, and this guy came up panhandling money from me, and two ICE officers walked up, asked CRIDs, identified themselves as ICE, asked CRIDs. I showed him mine, and the other guy didn't have an ID, and they said, "We have a warrant for you," and they arrested him and let me go. And they were just as polite and kind as could be.
Right. That's what they do. But if you have 200 people surrounding you, threatening you in your face with cameras and who knows, start pushing you, you know, that's when things get out of control and they see the ICE agent retaliate or they see some unrest and go, look what the ICE agent caused. No, they have a job to do or they need more. I love this. Chuck Schumer thinks they need different training. What does he know about training to be a police officer in a small department or a big city? Nothing. What does he know about being a federal officer, joining the military? Absolutely nothing. Do you think he ever worked out a day in his life? All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, we go inside the challenge with Iran. We've never seen unrest like this. We've never seen carnage like this. We're going to bring you inside it in just a moment.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We've seen what happens when we fail to do so. Under President Obama, rather than take aggressive action when Iranians were in the streets, really looking and searching for the type of leadership that President Trump is now delivering, what did Obama do? He remained silent and turned around and handed them billions of dollars, pallets of cash in return for this so-called Iran deal that was a massive failure. We had them at their knees in 2020. I worked on an aspect of it when I was ambassador to Japan, stopping all oil purchases by the Japanese from the Iranians. The maximum pressure program was working.
And that is Senator Bill Hagerty, a very sensible guy, and talking about Iran and what we could do and what we've done in the past and the movement by Joe Biden and Barack Obama to try to be friends and to alienate the Sunni Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia. And that totally blew up. And by the way, Iran, if they were smart, and they're not, they're just evil, they would have done a deal with Joe Biden. He would have done anything. He wouldn't have gotten verified through the Senate, but he would have done the deal. But instead, they ignore him for 4 years. They look at this guy's just so weak. We're not even going to deal with him. So they pretend to do talks, but they do five rounds of talks with Trump. He's like, this is not going anywhere. He took out their nuclear sites. Now they're killing people. He killed Soleimani too. And they put a bounty on his head. They said they're not going to miss. They're going to try to kill Trump again. Do you really think we're going to let them get away with this? So Trump is moving assets to the region. He's ready to do something. And we look at thousands of people have been killed in Iran. Thousands. Now, they said they postponed the hanging. That might be the case. But you know the kid, the guy they were supposed to hang, the 24-year-old? He got beaten to death in prison. So here's Jack Keane, Cut 19.
There is no doubt that this bloodbath has not ended. And what is actually happening on the ground now, they have brought in Iraqi militia, reported Pakistani and also Afghani militia, in addition to the IRGC, to the Baje militia, which they own, to patrol the streets, loudspeakers, and people with machine guns on the corners, making certain that nobody comes out of their residence. If they do, they're going to be shot, and they have shot them.
Okay. He knows he's with the Institute of Study of War, and that's what he's figuring out. And it looks like, you know, I'm listening to Trey Yinks. So today he's reporting from Israel, and they have great intelligence, and he's got great contacts. Even in Iran, the number could be 50,000 dead and over 300,000 somehow hurt or detained. So David Barnea, who is the director of Israel's Mossad spy agency, is in Florida today. He's in Miami. It's where the president's going to meet. He's meeting with Steve Witkoff. I'm sure he'll meet with the president if it need be. And they'll talk about their options because we have to get assets in the area. There's no rush. The president's going to do things on his time. That's one thing you got to understand. Because he waits on his time, it doesn't mean Maduro gets another day on the beach. Yeah, but when he would, they're ready and the time is right and the weather's correct, you're gone. Ends up in a Brooklyn jail. When the time is right, the nuclear program with Iran is gone. Soleimani lands in Iraq looking to create unrest, dead. Al-Baghdadi, dead. The Syrians rise up. They kill two of our guys and an interpreter. They've been hit four separate massive bombings in Syria. Anybody who doubts that he's going to retaliate, remember, Joe Biden never retaliated. He traveled once to basically blew up a locker after they killed our guys. The militias were going crazy inside Iraq. There was a sense that our base, we should just evacuate our base in Iraq because they were sitting ducks and it didn't look as though they were able to defend themselves against the Iranian militias. Those days are over. So they can sit there and poke you, Donald Trump, all you want. The hell is coming your direction. And I think the cyber attacks indicators to me are already happening. I hope are happening. Jack Keane indicated they are. Cut 20.
So anybody's thought here that President Trump has walking away from the red line, he doesn't use that term, but from the threat that he issued to the regime and the ultimatum, I'm going to hold you accountable if you go after and hurt and kill the Iranian people. Mm-hmm. That threat is still on the table, and I would take him at his word.
Look, if he didn't have a track record, if he was just a businessman in 2016 who thinks Iran's the problem, that's one thing. But he's got a track record, and I think he's proud of it. And I just can't believe that. I know it's just bluster and it's different behind the scenes and in front of the camera, but the stuff that they're putting out in the name of the great Ayatollah is only going to get him killed. The Vice Admiral, Robert Harvard, now retired, member of the Iran Policy Project at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, joins us now. Admiral, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. I'll take a seat to make it better on my cameraman, since you're on camera. What are our options with Iran? And what do you think about the bluster? I mean, they're going to assassinate Trump, and then they're warning Trump that if he... I mean, do they understand there's a track record there of action?
Brian, spot on. I think General Keane Jack's spot on also. Look, here's a government that for 45 years have just exploited their people, exported the Islamic Revolution to neighboring countries, attacked other nations in the region, and no one held them accountable. President Trump started holding them accountable when he took out Soleimani. He started holding them accountable when he struck in support of Israel at the nuke facilities. And now he's going to hold them accountable for what they've done to the Iranian people. And I think everyone in the region has made it very clear nobody wants the U.S. to strike. So let's do what Iran has been doing for decades. Let's go at them as asymmetrically. Let's, make sure they can't communicate, make sure those who are dissenting of them can communicate, not only to get the word out, but to coordinate actions against the regime. And so I think that's what's happening. We're taking a strategic pause to really prepare and execute a campaign plan that comes at them in indirect ways that support the Iranian people to get enduring peace and stability in the region and in Iran.
Admiral, for people that plan for this type of day, we've known our enemies my almost entire adult life. They've been a problem. 1979, they've been a problem, from taking our hostages to the issues with Oliver North and Bibles, to the terror that hit the Khobar Towers, to the hell they caused us in Iraq with their militias and their EFPs. So they've been the problem. But we seem to want to negotiate. Other people now say that we're the problem. We don't understand Iran. There's an element of the right that thinks that. But this president just says, when it comes to situations like that, they are the problem. And when you think about their financing of Hezbollah and Hamas, while their people can't get water in the capital city, while their dollar is like 142,000 reals, so their money's devalued. their lifestyle has plummeted, and they know their government's funding terror in lands far away. That's what put these people in the streets, not America.
Without a doubt. And they've been on the streets before looking for support. I think what's different now, you have a president who says, we're going to support you. Did that mean it need to be direct actions and strike? Oh, that may still be on the table, but not now, because our regional partners did not want to see that happen. But this president gets it. And again, you got to remember, we were kind of, you know, put off after the way Iraq played out and all the heat the administration took. So there was this fear to use great power, you know, and that lasted through two or three administrations. This team came to the table, and it's back to realpolitik, practical national security and leveraging force as a component to meet our national objectives. And so that's what's going to play out here in Iran. So I still think, because of the masses now in Iran who've galvanized against this government, it's inevitable. Now, the issue isn't just the mullahs. It's the IRGC, the Iran Islamic Revolutionary Guard. It's the militia, the besieged. Those guys are going to have to go, too, because they are the elements of power. And they see the mullahs gone. They'll try to seize powers, too. This has to be a broad campaign and go very deep. But when you turn the masses and enable the masses to deal with the forces they're opposing, I think this thing can go very quickly. They just need support.
Right. So we don't want to get on the ground. We're never going to get on the ground. I understand that, and nobody's calling for that. But how do you make sure the right people take power if you stay, you know, 30,000 feet above?
Well, I think the Iranian people know who the right people are and right the form is. And it's not that regime. So, again, you're going to have to take out the not only the Ayatollahs, the senior leadership, but those other components they use to leverage power. And it's very clear to the Iranian people who that is. Now, I think one of your real opportunities is the military. And that was the same thing in 1979 when it fell. I was there. I was in Tehran when that all occurred. The army turned. So that's what you got. They're professional military, subservient to who the leadership is. I think that's going to be the component you can salvage and get them to turn to be the professional armed forces they are, minus the IRGC, the militia, and those entities. And that can become the element that allows a new government to form and stabilize and make Iran the prosperous nation they were in the 70s and 80s. And a much more secure, stable, and peaceful region. And more importantly, Brian, considering all the resources, a very prosperous region.
Admiral, what do you mean you were there? You were actually on the ground in Iran?
Yeah, I grew up in Iran. I was there from 68 to, our family was there 79. So we were in Tehran when it fell. When the Shah left, Khomeini came, my mother, my sister, my brother and I left in late January of 79. My father stayed through the first, people don't realize this, they took the embassy twice. They took it in August of 79, but they released everybody the next day. And my father very astutely said, hey, that's not good, I'm leaving. And then when they seized it again in November 79, they held the hostages. So this thing, just as that transition, took a year or so to play out. And don't forget, shortly thereafter, the Iraqi-Iranian war kicked off. So yeah, I lived in Iran when it was a prosperous Western leaving. The Shah had women's reform, land reform, women's rights. I mean, women were wearing miniskirts. It was the Paris of the Middle East for decades. But this Islamic revolution took that, took control of the people, leveraged the Iraq-Iran war as a tool of nationalism to bring all the people together. And then from that point on, they really established their grip on the security apparatus to oppress them and kill anyone who dissented against them.
In reading now, back, in reading back on the history, Admiral, tell me if this is correct that you lived it. Khomeini lied about what he was going to do. that he talked about democratic reforms he was going to put in. He didn't go, hey, I'm going to be a theocracy and I'm going to make all women wear burkas. And if you don't, you know, if you don't cover your hair, I'm going to put you in jail. He never said that. It's like Fidel Castro lied about being a communist. He took over for give everyone freedom. He ends up being a communist. And did the Ayatollah lie about what he would do when he took over and left France?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. They hijacked the Muslim faith with false promises, and then their tone shifted very quickly. This was going to be an autocratic Muslim country, the Islamic revolution, and you were either a Muslim or you were an enemy. All the secular, Iran had been very secular, very prosperous. All that started deteriorating immediately after they came to power. So, yeah, it was false advertising, of course.
And the way they handle civilians, how little regard they have for them, the way they were shooting them point blank in the head, aiming for their eyes in crowds this over the past week. It's exactly the way Hamas treats the Palestinians. I mean, they put them in the hospitals, put them in the schools. They dug the tunnels underneath and dared Israel to bomb them and say, look, you guys are so cruel. You're killing innocent people. I mean, we should just understand that there's the values that they have don't resemble anything that we have.
Well, and worse than that, Brian, this is how crazy it all is. We knew they and their surrogates were killing our guys in Iraq. And yet we were accommodating and appeasing them to get the JCPOA. For years, we've had security on some of our highest officials in the U.S. because of Iranian threats to assassinate our people in the United States. Yep. Are you kidding me? These are just all the steps they've been unabated for decades. So they knew they could do anything they wanted to do because we would do nothing. That has all come to a screaming halt with the actions of President Trump. Mm-hmm. Qasem Soleimani during his first administration, but much more significantly, the strikes, the further threats of strikes, and more important, his promise to support the people of Iran to really draw the change from within, which is critical to give you long-term peace and stability in Iran.
Admiral, when they talk about, we only have a couple of minutes, but they want to get the assets into theater, into the region again, and we have one aircraft carrier heading over. What is enough, in general, for a non-military audience like we have right now, who love the military, we just don't have your background? What's enough hardware in the region?
Well, Brian,
firepower.
That we could do relatively quickly, but I think more important may be some stuff that takes a little longer. Ensuring all the dissidents have communications that they can talk to each other. Maybe we're going to, you know, ship guns and ammunitions. I'll tell you a great story, Brian, and I know we're cut short. I'm in the Frankfurt airport. I'm listening to an Iranian guy talk to his boss in Tehran. Says, hey, I can't sell more products because when he got off the phone, I go, how bad's it in Tehran? He says, look, they're shooting and killing everyone. But he turns to me and he says, this would never happen in the United States. I go, why? Because you have guns. Your government can't revolt against it. So he knew our Bill of Rights and the right to bear guns and what that really meant.
Yep.
So the lesson to me is, let's get them a lot of guns so they can fight these guys in ammo. That may be going on.
I hope so.
There are a lot of
that's a great
other
idea.
Stuff internally we do while we position that. So there's a lot of components, and most importantly, giving them the tools to realize their goals and aspirations.
Yeah, drop the weapons off and let them fight for their own freedom and make it a fair fight, right? Make it a fair fight, right, Admiral?
That's exactly right, Brian.
You got it. Admiral, thanks so much. Great great biography, great history, the perfect person to talk to in these perilous times. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Carson, I'm curious, did you have class yesterday? What has it been like being you as a student this week, particularly yesterday?
No class. I graduated 2 years ago, so obviously I've been working towards other degrees now that I've gotten to Miami, but these programs take a little longer than just a year to finish, so obviously I'm not enrolling again next semester.
Right. That's a guy really dedicated to his academics, isn't it? Listen, I totally understand. The quarterback of the Miami Hurricanes, he's going pro next year, clearly. But just to go out and tell people what we know. Look, I'm not covering sports every day anymore, but basically, it's never been easy to be a Division I major sport athlete, ever. You take 12 credits maximum in the best days in the 80s and 90s. But now in the age of NIL, where you get paid just to make the roster, you get some money just to get the roster. Now the school's paying you, other outside sources and other people are paying you. There's no sense that you're a student. When's the last time you go, well, that wide receiver would be playing, but he was academically ineligible. He got under a C. That used to be the case when I was growing up. Academically ineligible. They never do it now. Now you got guys in their seventh year, third school.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Thanks so much for watching One Nation last night. And one of the things I did on One Nation last night is just talked about Venezuela, Iran, Panama Canal, as well as the secondary sanctions that could be coming down on Russia. And I said, what is the one factor that links it all together? And it's China. And that's what the president's doing. He had one approach when he first started this term and all 4 years, basically, last term. It was, China's the problem. I'm going to address China. And they get their pride up, and then we go at it, and we go at it with trade, and we threaten each other on the water. And the president, in my opinion, his people around him says there's a different way to do this. And I'd say, what fuels China? Literally fuels, circle that. What fuels China is cheap gas, cheap oil. And where are you getting it from? Venezuela. How's that working out now? Where are you getting it from? Iran. Well, massive sanctions. They've been getting discounts in exchange for Iran, I guess, some trade with Iran. Well, that's about to end, I sense. And then the secondary sanctions. Guess who's buying oil from Russia? Discount. China. And then I read this column on Sunday with Steve Mosher, one of this country's foremost Chinese expert, best-selling author on it, The Devil and the Communist China. And he comes out with an article that was in Sunday's New York Post with close allies, Iran and Venezuela in crisis. China is scrambling to save energy and face. And you see the policy that deep thinkers like Steve came up with, and I think that the Trump staff is really focusing on. I'm going to talk to Steve in a moment, and I'm going to talk about Greenland. We're going to talk about the challenges, what's happening in Minneapolis. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to the 74th governor of Maine, Paul LePage, and we're going to talk about what's happening there because the huge scrutiny now is on Maine. And believe it or not, their Somali community caught up, as I mentioned two weeks ago, on One Nation. They're caught up in scandal because it seems like they are combining to bilk the system and do massive fraud and get the money possibly to terror groups back in Somalia. But let's bring in Steve Mosher right now. Steve, welcome back.
Good to be here, Brian.
So Steve, you see the bigger play. It's not just you put Maduro in prison in Brooklyn, but more importantly, push Russia and especially China out of Venezuela. You see a bigger story here.
Oh, there's absolutely a bigger story. You see, China is a resource-poor country. People need to understand it can't feed itself. It can't provide enough petroleum, gas, natural gas to fuel its economic machine, much less its military. So it has to get those resources from somewhere. And if you cut off those resources, you cripple China and you prevent it from behaving aggressively. And that's exactly what Donald Trump and his team are doing. In fact, there's an ancient Chinese strategist, we call him Sun Tzu in Chinese. Some people here would say Sun Tzu, who said the best general does not win 50 battles, 50 wars and 50 fights. The best general never fights at all because he takes away a vital resource from the enemy that prevents him from fighting at all. What is the vital resource we're taking away from China that will prevent them from fighting? It's oil, it's petroleum, it's natural gas. This is actually called in Chinese, the strategy is called taking the firewood from out from under the pot. So your enemy can't cook up trouble. Well, Trump is taking the oil from the engines that fuel China's industrial machine. And yeah, they won't be able to cause trouble in the future if they're short on energy, as they now will be.
And I understand, too, I mean, they're doing it without the confronting China gets their pride up, right? They're worried about being embarrassed. They want to be perceived as a superpower at all times. And when you go out and call them out, you end up, you know, going tit for tat back and forth with tariffs or Taiwan or something like that. This tact is, yeah, I get along with President Xi. Great. Yeah, I'm going to go visit him in April. Oh, by the way, Venezuela, you can buy oil, but it's going to be at full price. And then the secondary said, you know, so instead of calling them out, making them respond, you do things rather than say things.
Oh, this was even more in your face than that, Brian, because on the very day that Maduro was captured, a few hours before, he met with a high-profile delegation sent by Xi Jinping to Caracas, Venezuela, to meet with Maduro and assure him of their all-weather partnership, that China would stand by their side, that China would continue to sell weapons and buy their oil, and that everything will be fine. And a few hours later, Maduro is whisked away in the middle of the night by U.S. Special Forces, and the delegation from China is sitting in a hotel a couple miles away. This is crushing. This is not just Xi Jinping losing face. This is crushing his face. This is embarrassing him in the eyes of the world. It's an embarrassment he won't long forget. And I have to tell you one more thing. China just finished construction, spending $10 billion of a refinery in South China that it would be dedicated to refining oil from Venezuela.
Really?
Heavy oil. It has sulfur in it. This refinery is dedicated to refining that oil. It stands empty today. $10 billion, a white elephant built by the socialist country of China, which now has no oil to feed its furnaces. That's another blow.
That's the first time I'm hearing that. Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I do hear that we built our refineries in the 70s for Venezuelan oil because it's extremely thick and dirty. But that's in not bad dirty, but that's what they say. It's the type of oil that needs to be a special refinery. But let me bring you to something else, Steve. This Delcy Rodriguez, and you might not know Venezuelan politics as well, the infrastructure as well as China. You can only be an expert on so many things. But the word is that she was the go-between with Russia and China. And I worry that she's running things now. How do you just eliminate those relationships?
Yeah, well, that's a problem. You know, I mean, in Iraq, we went in, we fired everybody, right? As the president commented, we fired the generals, we fired the administration, everyone was gone. And then it left a vacuum. And into that vacuum, what came? The Islamic State, ISIS. We don't want to create a vacuum in Venezuela. I have friends in Venezuela. I've been in communication with them. They are overjoyed at the removal of Maduro. They are also praying that civil war will not now grip the country. And if you try to remove everyone and airdrop someone like the candidate,
Maria Conchita,
Machado, into Caracas, she won't survive for a week. What do you think?
We're going to end up being the security. We'll be on the streets being the security.
We're going to send in troops to secure her. We don't want to do that. We want to work within the existing structure, find out who the good guys are. There must be some, and get rid of the bad guys over time, hold elections in 6 months or a year, and have a peaceful transition back to democracy. The Venezuelan people are capable of democracy. They have been a full-fledged democracy before. 30 years ago, they were the most prosperous country in Latin America. It is communism, socialism, corruption that destroyed that economy. But we can bring it back. The Venezuelan people can bring it back. And those statements aren't true in a place like Afghanistan or Iraq, where the people have never enjoyed democracy. So I think the prospects for a democratic rule, respect for human rights in Venezuela are very, very bright.
Steve, how would you characterize the Chinese presence in Cuba?
Oh, the Chinese run 4 espionage stations in Cuba. So they are spying on everything that Southcom does and sending that information back to China. So it's in intelligence work. China is also building ports in Cuba. And those ports, of course, were doing things like helping the secret tankers from Venezuela come in and offload their oil, which keeps the Cuban economy running. China also provides the high-tech equipment that the Chinese, that the Cuban government uses to control the Cuban population. And you know, we know that the Ayatollahs in Iran turned off the internet. Well, in China, using Huawei equipment, the Cuban government in Havana can do the same thing to the Cuban people. And they did. The last time there were mass demonstrations against tyranny in Cuba, what did the government of Cuba do? It hit that Huawei off switch and shut down communications throughout the island, preventing people who wanted freedom and democracy from organizing, from taking to the streets in a concerted fashion. And the regime was able to maintain itself. So China helps Cuba, the communists in Cuba, stay in power in many, right, many different ways.
So it looks
and
like
now their influence there is going to be reduced as well.
So what's interesting, Steve, is that I think the next thing we got to do, and I'm sure they're working on it, is find a way to overcome their cyber control. So if they could shut off those lights, we have to find a way to overcome that, hack it back, and put it back on if they could shut off the internet. And I'm sure with you got guys like Elon Musk on your side, they could figure out a way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We've got to be in, you know, one of the ways that we overthrew communism in Eastern Europe was we sent fax machines to Solidarity in Poland back in the late 80s. Remember fax machines?
Sure.
Some people do.
I still have
them. In the 90s. Yeah, I do too. And we sent there. And so that fax machine, they were able to communicate to different chapters of Solidarity throughout Poland and organize under Lech Walesa the massive demonstrations, the resistance to the communist regime that led to the fall of the communist regime in Poland. We need to enable the Cuban people to communicate among themselves in the same way. And if we do that, I guarantee you, they themselves will overthrow the tyranny that has subjected them to brutal conditions for the last, 65 years now the Cubans have lived under a communist dictatorship. It's time for that to end.
I hear you. So in terms of the Chinese trade, they're beginning to make inroads with Canada. They want to get that electric car everywhere. That electric car is affordable. I guess it's reliable because it's built on almost slave wages and stolen intellectual property. But they want to get it out there. It looks like Canada might open the door to that. How crazy would that be?
Well, King Carney, as I call him, is a globalist. He's a member of the globalist elite, a frequenter of the World Economic Forum. Went to China and announced that there was a new strategic partnership between China and Canada. And he's letting in 49,000 electric vehicles a year for the next 3 years. By the way, the Canadian automobile industry is furious about this.
Of course.
The premier of Ontario province, Doug Ford, is furious about this because it's going to cause layoffs, disruption, and maybe the collapse of the automotive industry in Canada. So it's a real sellout. It's not just a slap in the face to the United States. It's actually a sellout of Canada itself by a globalist who 3 years ago was saying that China's our number one enemy. We have to be wary of China's inroads, its espionage and everything in Canada. He's changed his tune dramatically.
Because he's fighting with Trump and Trump's fighting with Canada. So China, you might think that they have a trade surplus, right? And they feel good about it. But it turns out they have a huge job problem, the job market, the hiring, the employment issue is huge. And their economy, they say, has lost momentum in the last quarter. Retail sales is in the toilet. Industry is down. And guess what? They can export, but no one's buying anything because they don't trust the economy. There's no social safety net. So they're making, they have to be almost a complete export economy. It's hard to live like that.
It is. It's especially hard to live like that when the president of the United States, a country that buys almost 20% of China's exports, puts tariffs on your exports. Yeah, the export sector of the economy in China is the only sector that works according to market principle. It's the only sector that really makes a profit. The rest of the country is run by what? By government-owned businesses, state-owned enterprises, white elephants that oftentimes lose money rather than make money. And there's no consumer sector of the Chinese economy. It's all real estate and export. Well, guess what's happened to real estate? It has collapsed because no one now is buying those empty apartments in China. There's 75 million That's million empty apartments in China today. And the reason they're standing empty is that everyone wants to hoard their cash. No one wants to put money into a real estate market where prices have collapsed by, in major cities, 30, 40, 50% in value over the last 3 years. So your apartment that you thought was worth $500,000 is now worth $250,000. And guess what? You may still owe in China $300,000 or $400,000 on that apartment. So you're underwater. That describes tens of millions of formerly middle-class people in China who have been bankrupted over the last couple of years. The export sector of the economy is under tremendous pressure from the tariffs. And then you've got the problem of the demographic decline. You've got China's population aging and dying, losing people every year. China is now filling more coffins than cradles each year. More Chinese are dying than are being born. China is now no longer the most populous country in the world. It is now number two after India. So one thing that communism has done, and communism always kills, sometimes it kills slowly, sometimes it kills quickly. Well, the one child policy killed off 400 million Chinese, and now China's population is aging and dying. That's an irreversible decline, Brian, and that will hurt them increasingly in years to come.
Steve, do you agree with the president that we need Greenland to combat China? Because it hasn't been a Chinese ship spotted in Greenland in 10 years, they say. What does Steve Mosher think?
Well, what I read is the Chinese press, and what the Chinese press is now saying are things like the people of Greenland are really members of our race. In the Chinese press, they describe them as Mongoloids. And the Chinese press says, we are Mongoloids, they are Mongoloids. We properly belong together because we share common genes.
Here we go again. Wow. I did not see that. So, is that recently?
I'm sorry. Yes, that's just that's today. That's yesterday. That's what's being said right now. So there are racial claims being made towards integrating the population of Greenland with that of China. But no, I mean, China has an Arctic strategy. China is building a half a dozen icebreakers. China lays claim to part of the Arctic, even though, they are not, technically speaking, an Arctic power in that they don't have territory. Wow. Within the Arctic Circle. But nonetheless, they're moving into the Arctic in the same way they're moving into the Antarctic. And they are a real threat to Greenland. But I worry about all of the Russian missiles, especially the Mach 10 hypersonic missiles that are based in the Kola Peninsula, which would fly over Greenland to hit the United States. We need an early warning system in Greenland. We need one under our control that can't be sabotaged. We don't want to run it through NATO because that would slow down the command and control system. When you're talking about Mach 10, that's 7,000 miles an hour. You have fractions of a second to respond.
Steve.
So we need to be in control.
Fantastic. Every sentence was great for our audience. Thanks so much for the intelligence and perspective and everything. Read his column in the Sunday New York Post. You can get it online. With close allies in Iran and Venezuela in crisis, China is scrambling to save energy, and you'll find out why. And face. Steve Mosher, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And best-selling author. Back in a moment.
From breaking news to big-name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, guys, don't forget to join me in Fort Myers, Florida. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Back on track, first time in 2026. And here's what I'm going to be doing, celebrating America 250. First off, on the top, I'm going to be talking about my history books and going through America's past and find out why we're the superpower we are today and how we got there. And then I'm also going to make it inspirational, motivational, and we're definitely interactive while also riding the day's headlines. We got a huge audience already. There's a couple hundred seats left, but the place is huge. So we've already sold a ton of tickets, but let's just sell it out. I hear it's a fantastic market, and I want to see you all in person. Also, I got time before the show for a VIP. So we got about 80. I got to cap it off soon at about 100. So get the VIP. This way we get a chance to talk and find out what's on your mind before everything starts up on stage. I promise. This is a show. This isn't a lecture. This is a show. So, and it's going to be streaming on Fox Nation. So go to BrianKilmeade.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He is complicit in the theft of over $9 billion by many of the same people that have been attacking federal officers for the past 2 weeks. He will condition any sort of investigation that the state does in order to continue to try to fit the far left narrative, which is a small fraction of a minority of Minnesotans. Most of Minnesota, Jackie, is operating normal. The vast majority of it is. Tim Walz and Jacob Frey are continuing to put this forward and get it going to the point that their media operatives in Minnesota who help them support their narrative will keep that narrative going.
That is Steve Drazkowski. He is a Minnesota state senator, Republican, talking about Governor Walz complicit in the theft of $9 billion, if not more. And that's why you don't see much of Walz out front and center. And that's why he's not running for re-election. In my view, he knows how dirty his hands are. Either he is the most naive, as in using his words, knucklehead in history, or a nod, a wink and a nod to let it happen, or he took part in it. And Jacob Frey, this guy is an egomaniac who totally is oblivious to the fact is that people are laughing in his face. And if you want to really laugh, he's wearing short shorts, dancing on stage, trying to impress the Somali community to music. You know he's never heard in his life. That's how real he is. So the fraud is not just there. We know it's being heavily investigated now in California and also in Maine, where a huge faction of the corruption is centered around the Somali community. Money comes in falsely and then goes out. A guy that knows all that and more is the former governor of that state, the 74th governor, Governor Paul LePage. Governor, welcome back. We are now seeing an investigation. We have Griff Jenkins going there tomorrow, hearing more and more about what's going on in Maine. What could you tell us?
Well, I will tell you that unlike Minnesota, the governor of Maine is the architect of the fraud. It goes back to 2015 when I was governor. The attorney general at that time was Janet Mills. We presented her with a number of fraud allegations, and she never, ever prosecuted any of them. So I went to the legislature, and I asked them to allow me to hire lawyers so that we could investigate and prosecute. She went to the legislature, and it was democratically controlled, and she convinced them not to give me the money. And therefore, I then went to the Obama administration and tried to get HHS to do something, and they refused. And so, voila, here we are 10 years later, and the hunt is on.
Governor, what would they tell you? What was the reason why, for example, HHS would say no? And especially, you're a credible guy. You're governor of a state. I got some corruption here. I need an investigation. How could they say no?
They just simply said no. And I forget her name now, but she was the former governor who was heading up HHS. And she just refused to. Now, I'll tell you one thing. In defense of everybody, in 2016... when the administration changed, I did go to the Trump administration, and I went to the lady who was running Medicaid, and she told me that I was right on the law, but I was wrong on the optics. I went over her head and went to the secretary, and 2 days before we were scheduled to meet, he canceled, and he never wanted to reschedule.
So, in other words, the optics, Somalis, black. Let's not do this right now.
President Trump had just come in. That was in the spring of 2016. He had just been inaugurated, and they didn't want to touch it.
Right. That wouldn't be the case now, and it certainly is not the case now.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, so they're going, going all in.
I didn't know in 2016 that would never get to the president, but now we know because we have spoken to the White House.
And the White House is going to pursue it. What could you tell us specifically that you found?
What we found is a company called Gateway. And then there was, well, actually, there's more than one company. We found fraud in the TANF program, the WIC program, Medicaid programs. We found fraud in all of them. In the TANF program, we found grocery stores that were giving cash for EBT cards, on EBT cards. And Gateway, which is an organization that provides Medicaid assistance, we found that they were being overpaid. So we tried to get them to pay it back. And this is when they refused, and we went to the attorney general. And at that point, she didn't want to touch it.
So, yeah, found out one of the guys in charge evidently has direct hooks to the Somali government. And we question is, where's the money? Where's it going? It was going back overseas, correct?
Correct. Well, in 2023, we had this mass shooting in Lewiston, which is my hometown, which is also the hometown where the current governor was the district attorney. She's a Democrat. I'm a Republican. The day after the shooting, I asked her to get together, and because the shooting occurred in October, I said, let's get together and raise some money for these families at Christmas. She said, no, I'm going to allow the Maine Community Foundation to raise the money. Come to find out, they set up a committee headed by one of the individuals at Gateway. And out of the $6.9 million raised, only $4.7 million went to the families and the first responders. $2 million were distributed among the nonprofits in the region, of which the Somali community were major benefactors.
That's amazing, Governor. That's absolutely amazing. So what could you tell me about Governor Mills, who wants to be the senator at 80 years old, first get the nomination, and then people say that she gives them the best chance to flip that Senate seat against Susan Collins. What could you tell me about her?
I would tell you about her that she should be in Bernie Madoff's cell in federal prison. She is enormously corrupt about Medicaid, TANF, the WIC program. We have over 300 Chinese cannabis cartel houses growing marijuana in Maine and transporting it. And she, when there was an uproar about it, she licensed them all to do medical marijuana. It's just awful. And to top it off, her brother is doing all the real estate transactions.
It's absolutely insane. But why don't the people of Maine, why aren't they more in an uproar about this? Is it just all politics? Is it mostly
because
Democrats?
The media in Maine, it's all about the media in Maine. It's owned and operated by the Democratic Party. In 2022, when I ran against Janet Mills, 30 days before the election, the Bangor Daily News received $800,000 and the Portland Press Herald received over $2 million just 30 days before the election. And they just blasted me for 30 days straight.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, weren't you an independent?
Pardon?
Were you an independent?
No, I was a Republican.
Republican. So when you look at that state now, what do you think the chances a Republican have? Are they still going to be up against what you were up against, Governor?
Yeah, I think a state, that's why I'm running for Congress as second CD. The second CD is basically Republican. It's Republican plus 6 points. CD1, it's impossible. And that's where the population is. 60% of the population of Maine lives south of Augusta.
Wow. And Maine needs so much in the infrastructure. There's so much that needs to be done, right?
Absolutely. Maine is 90% forest. We used to have 40 paper companies and major lumber industries in Maine. We were known as shipbuilders back in the 1800s. Unfortunately, now we're down to four. There's only one that I would say is... it's got the technology to move forward and compete on a world class basis. Three of them, while they're struggling and they're working hard, they don't have the resources to upgrade their mills to the point where they can be competitive worldwide.
So at that point, but if put in the right direction, you could bring industry back there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have right now, like I said, we have 90% of our state is forest. It's a maturing forest. In fact, one of the things I want to do when I'm a congressman is get the federal government to help fight the budworm, because the current administration won't let us spray the, for the budworms.
Wow. What are your conversations with the White House like?
We're just telling them where to look.
Right. And are they, as far as you know, I read that they are investigating. Do you believe they are investigating with vigor?
Yes. I will tell you one thing. This administration has hired four people that worked for me when I was governor. One of them is in domestic policy, and he was working in health and human services. So he knows where all the bodies are buried, and he knows exactly where to look. And he's working in the White House now. In fact, I speak to him very often. We have another one who's head of the Small Business Administration. We have another one who's working on farm bills for farm credit. So we have people from Maine that are in the administration and are working very hard to improve things.
So you're trying to take Jared Goldenseed, who is looked at as a somewhat of a moderate Democrat. So you feel right. as though that still, even though a Democrat won it, you feel as though a Republican is favored.
Well, yes, because, well, Jared's not, I'm not running against Jared. He's gone. So now I don't know who the candidate's going to be. They have a primary coming up. But all the polls are saying leaning Republican, and one poll is saying likely Republican. I've won the second district every time by above 50%. So ranked choice voting may not even become a factor. My popularity in the second district is equal or upwards of the same level as President Trump, who won it by about 10 points.
Prediction, do you think Janet Mills gets the Democratic nomination for the Senate?
Not if the DOJ does their job.
Because he's running against a guy that basically had a Nazi tattoo, right?
Yeah. I don't believe that they're going to beat Susan Collins. I don't agree with Susan all the time, but I will say this. She is a senior senator, hair appropriations in the United States of America, and she's been very good to the state of Maine, and we need to remember that.
And Governor, by the way, if you are a staunch, big-time conservative in Maine, you don't get elected. You have to reflect the constituency that you represent.
CD2 is rural, very rural, and very conservative.
Right, but I'm talking about Senator Collins.
Senator Collins. I understand. But there's even the people in CD1 are very, very bright. And they understand that she's brought a lot of things to Maine. For instance, $190 million is going to rural hospitals. Just last week, a whole lot of money, I forget how much, but in the hundreds of millions of dollars coming to Maine to help law enforcement. So, yes.
Yeah.
In order to win in Maine, you have to be a moderate. I was very fortunate as a conservative, fiscal conservative. I won because the state was in dire need of someone to fix the checkbook. And there was several people who ran. You know, I had a lot of independents ran against me, so I was able to win with 40%. In 14, I ran against a congressman from CD2, Mike Michaud, and there again, an independent ran. And unfortunately, that independent is now in jail for pedophilia, but...
Yeah. All right. So
it works in Maine.
Governor, we're going to be all over this fraud investigation. We would wish you the best of luck, and we hope to chronicle it as you try to go back to go to Washington and win that congressional seat. And then we'll keep our eye on the Senate race as well. But most of all, the corruption that is taking money away from good people from Maine who hopes their taxpayer dollars were helping, but instead it's helping Somalia, it seems. Governor LePage, thanks
Ryan,
so much.
Listen to this.
Okay.
One quick thing. One lady had hospital bills of $93,000. She was shot in the mass shooting. She got $30,000 from this fund. And the Somali organization in Lawson got $75,000.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Hopefully there's a trail. There's a trail and we can put people in jail. Thanks, Governor. Governor LePage, thank you so much. Best of luck. 1-866-408-7669. Just quick announcement. Special thanks to KVI 570 AM in Seattle. Starting today, you're carrying our show for 3 hours. We are your morning show from 6 to 9 AM Pacific time. And that is Talk Radio 570 KVI. I look forward to getting your calls and getting your responses. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Click on comments so I can find out what's on your mind in Seattle. Don't move.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm looking at the 2026 elections, and frankly, it's going to be a wipeout. Your viewers need to know that the Democrats are going to pick up at a minimum 25 seats, maybe as high as 45. Wow. In all likelihood, the Democrats will carry the Senate. So, and I think we're shaping up very well for the 2028 election, but I don't know, 2030 is, I'm 81, that might be on the other side of my horizon.
So, a couple things. James Carville, I liked his bluntness, he's great. Just, I always say this, the analogy is Charles Barkley. He's very quotable, he's always emotional, and people like to quote him. But he's been wrong so often. Kamala Harris is definitely going to win. She's the perfect candidate. Unbelievable energy. I've never seen anything like it. We know what happened. Worst candidate ever. And now she's like, worst candidate ever. So you do not know. He should know this. You do not know who's going to win in January. If he came out and said the Democrats are going to lose, I still say, you don't even know what you're talking about. Why would you predict this? You don't know where the economy is going to be. You don't know what international conflict is going to happen. You don't know what other challenge. The only thing I can guarantee you is some other, you don't know what natural disaster straight ahead and how this machine will handle it, the Trump machine will handle it. So hold your horses. Number two is the one thing with everything they're saying about immigration and that the president pursuing legal immigrants in country is not as popular. Still, Republicans got it by 10 points. On the generic ballot, they're trailing by four. Generic ballot, trailing by four. Of course, that you're going to say to me that's not overcut. You can't overcome that. Of course, all this stuff is in play. To me, it's like predicting who's going to be in the Super Bowl before a season starts. You could say what you want. Have fun with it. But you have no idea the injuries. You have no idea how people are going to play. You have no idea how people are going to coach. You have no idea about people's opponents, who's going to be better than you thought, who's going to emerge, who your draft picks are. So you can make predictions, but they're worthless. Only fun to talk about. Maybe help you pick your fantasy team. So that's what he thinks. And I thought the fascinating story today, I think it was Politico, about how Kamala Harris and also Governor Shapiro has his book out. And Shapiro says, when talking to Kamala Harris, he was surprised how much she disliked being vice president. She complained about not having a bathroom in her office, complained about not being involved in any decisions. Really? I thought you were involved in every decision. So that's a little bit of an issue. Also, she didn't accomplish anything. And then she said, she is getting big crowds in certain states. Every one of the states she's getting the biggest crowd are Republican states that Trump's going to win, places like Mississippi. They find enclaves in there that maybe give her that state in a primary, but she's never going to win it generally. She thinks that she's got a shot, and then look at the polls and she's one or two. That'll be a godsend for Republicans. So many top Democrat donors and even potential rivals remain skeptical Harris will run again, partly because of her ties to Joe Biden. So let's see now if she's going to distance herself from Joe Biden when she spent, 4 years saying and making all decisions with Joe Biden. Fascinating. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.